Well, I'm joined today by writer, author, literary educator Kai Kello, who's recently published Maple Leaf Rag. It's your second book of poetry. Mm-hmm. So maybe just in way of introduction, if you could just explain for us Maple Leaf Rag, the title, where does it come from?
I've always been interested in music and nurtured a long interest in jazz music. Mm-hmm. And Maple Leaf Rag is an early jazz tune. It's a ragtime song, hence rag. Mm-hmm. It was copyright 1899 by Scott Joplin from St. Louis, Missouri. So it was probably composed sometime before 1899. So this is in the 19th century, at the end of the 19th century, that the tune was composed and recorded. Mm-hmm. In its heyday, it sold a million copies of its sheet music. Around that time, the earlier 20th century, that's how music was sold, as mm-hmm, sheet music. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it was a massive hit, given the time. And if anyone cares to YouTube it, just type in Maple Leaf Rag, Scott Joplin. The Maple Leaf Rag will come up. And when you listen to it, suddenly it becomes familiar. You know that you've heard it elsewhere. I mean, it's been in Looney Tunes cartoons, in Hollywood movies, in Broadway productions, all throughout the past century and into ours. So it's part of the public domain. And it seems to be a part of everyone's cultural consciousness. The term Maple Leaf Rag itself, the title of the tune, mm-hmm. I didn't include this note in the book, but there was a Maple Leaf Social Club in St. Louis, Missouri, which was an African-American social club. And Scott Joplin wrote the Maple Leaf Rag as a kind of tribute to that social club. Mm-hmm. My interest in the title came about not just because of my love for the song or my interest in the Maple Leaf Social Club, but because when I thought about it, the title seemed to combine jazz culture with Canadian culture. So okay. The maple leaf, which is our major national symbol, with rag. And a rag is a ragtime tune. To rag would be to play a piece of music in the ragtime style. So that hints at jazz culture and by extension at African-American culture and by further extension, black culture in the Americas. And it also hints at, instead of an exclusivity, an interdependence, a relationship between the black cultures of the Americas and Canadian culture, that they inform one another. They're not exclusive. They don't exist separately. I was asked by one magazine editor, why didn't you choose the title Darktown Strutter's Ball? Because after all, that tune, which comes from around the same era, was composed by a Canadian. Scott Joplin is American. Darktown Strutter's Ball was composed by Shelton Brooks. And it was a funny question because, number one, it assumed that I was just kind of thoughtlessly lifting a song title, right? But number two, it sort of mixed up the fact that the composer of the ragtime tune was American with the song's relevance to Canada. I told him that I couldn't have taken Darktown Strutter's Ball because I don't live in Darktown. And even though there are black neighborhoods in Canada, they're still part of the nation at large. They're not exclusive or separate. And Darktown Strutter's Ball stresses a separateness, whereas Maple Leaf Rag stresses not an exclusivity, but an inclusion and a dependency. So the fact that the tune comes from the States and that Scott Joplin was American, that really doesn't have any bearing on my choosing the title. Right. Mm-hmm. My taking that title is reminiscent of a similar process that has always gone on in writing, mm-hmm. in film, and lately a lot in music, which is sampling. I call it riffing off. You riff off something else. Mm-hmm. You take it and you incorporate it into your work, and it acquires a new significance and gives your work an historical context by, you know, the title, I guess, Maple Leaf Rag being taken and to refer to the Canadian experience.
Well, in a sense, you mentioned the interdependency of culture. In regards to the black culture of the United States and the black culture of Canada, the relationship that's complex, interdependent, that crosses borders. Just would be interested in hearing what you think about that relationship today. I mean, if we're looking at your published work in 2010, you're using a song title from the last years of the 19th century. But today, here in 2010, you're utilizing that title of an American composer. So that interdependency seems to not only cross borders, but cross an entire century. I'd be interested to hear some reflections on that relationship now and also dating back 100 years.
Well, one thing I would say is that in art, there's a kind of timeliness that's intertwined with a timelessness. You know, when you're sitting there composing your poem, you can have characters, music, places, events from different centuries appearing simultaneously. So you can have Shakespeare in a discussion with Muhammad Ali. You know, you can have Jack Johnson beat up Ronald Reagan if you want. You can have all kinds of things, interesting things happen, historical juxtaposition. So there's a kind of timelessness. But at the same time, being timely is important because taking a title like Maple Leaf Rag kind of links two different centuries. It links our century now with the previous century. And it links the ragtime era with our era right now. And I'll get into that in just one second. I think that there's an important link between the two. You had asked about cultures crossing borders. There's always been a lot of cultural traffic between African America and Black Canadian communities. There were the Black loyalists who came up after the war for American independence and settled in Nova Scotia. Mm-hmm. There has been a lot of the old railway porters in St. Henry and Little Burgundy in Montreal mm-hmm. were African American. Mm-hmm. There were some West Indians as well. Mm-hmm. There were African Americans who came up on a ship from Frisco to Victoria, BC, in the 19th century. And the Vancouver author Wade Compton wrote his first book, 49th Parallel Psalm, about that group of settlers. And there's also been a lot of movement when it comes to music, when it comes to other elements of culture. So you would have, you know, I mean, Oscar Peterson, he made his fame and fortune when he started playing in the States mm-hmm. in jazz clubs and in jazz at the Philharmonic. And, you know, our culture has been informed by the different movements in African-American culture, too. The jazz music, mm-hmm. blues, hip-hop, what have you. So there's always been that kind of cross-pollination. There's been also movements of Canadians south. One thing I will say about a parallel between the last century and our century is that I thought about it, and when the ragtime tune Maple Leaf Rag was composed, the tune has in it a kind of energy and dynamism that is really interesting because slavery had ended, you know, a number of years before that. And there had been migrations of African Americans to different parts of the nation. And there had probably been this sense of hopefulness and this sense that African Americans were going to be even further informing and participating in the mainstream of American culture. And that was some of the dynamism that fired, you know, the jazz age, the ragtime era. I mean, ragtime was an international musical phenomenon. I mean, it spread across the globe. So it wasn't just a localized thing played in dusty little clubs in small towns. It was an international phenomenon. And there were other phenomena, cultural phenomena around that time. I mean, there were dance crazes like the Charleston, the cakewalk. You know, these things were hit big, not just in the States, but in Europe as well. And I think the Maple Leaf Rag embodies that spirit of cultural expansion and dynamism. And I think a similar thing is happening nowadays. We're moving into a time where in major North American cities, within the next 20 years, those cities are going to be predominantly people of quote-unquote visible minorities. And immigration is going to be at the root of that. So there's a massive cultural shift that's happening, a demographic shift. And that brings with it a kind of energy and dynamism and hope for the future, especially for people like perhaps myself who had been grown up never thinking that would actually happen, where you're always sort of in the minority. Mm-hmm. So there's this broader shift that's going to totally change mainstream culture within the next, you know, 100 years. And that's remarkable. So our time today seems to resonate with a similar dynamism that existed back at around the time that the Maple Leaf Rag was composed. So I felt that our century was linked to that previous century, perhaps through that song.
Now, Maple Leaf Rag in 2010, Kai Kello, that's your book, second book of poetry. Beyond historical reflections, your book also deals a lot with the borders of language and looking at manipulation of language in relation to print form and also in relation to sound. One particular poem, Babylon, it's repeating and utilizing the letter B and words that begin with B, and there's a narrative formed. I'd be interested in hearing about your perspectives on the relationship between the creative process as a performer who works with sound and then what appears on the page in your latest book in Maple Leaf Rag.
The poem you're talking about, Babylon's B-side, is a riff on the protest poem, kind of informed by dub poetry and informed by the some elements of the reggae music vernacular from back in the 70s and the concept of, you know, this is Babylon, but it's not kind of totally succumbing to the dogma of the protest poem. It's playful in a sense that some protest poems are not. It's an alliterative piece, so every word begins with the letter B. It's a long litany of ways to, quote-unquote, chant down Babylon. I've always been interested in the way that language looks and the way that it sounds, the way that letters look and words look and the way that they sound. And what I try to create, and with Maple Leaf Rag, what I've tried to create is a work that combines the visual with the auditory with a sense of meaning creation. The idea is to have a sort of experience when you're reading that resonates in different senses, right? So that it's at some moments it's highly visual and it strikes you as a visual experience. At some moments it's an auditory experience. Some moments it might be both. But there's always some thread that can be followed. And there's always a tension between all of those elements. The difficulty in that and the interest for me lies in the fact that the page is a silent, static medium. So nothing moves. No sound is made aside from the whiff of air when you flip it. But how do you make a silent, static medium resonate with a sense of movement and sound and have the energy and the movement and sound of a performance? That's very difficult to do. But my aim is to try to make language the performer. So the language must be the thing that performs. When I was younger, there were some moments when I was, I guess, fairly angry when I started writing poetry. And I thought one of the things that I thought that I was going to do, that I swore to do, I swore that I would break the English language. Trying to break a language is like trying to knock out the wind by swinging at it. You can't do it. It's just not possible. It's too supple and it will wrap itself around every attempt that you try. And it will in a sense, co-opt every attempt to destroy it. You can't break a language.
In a sense, it almost feels that also your reflections on the English language or your manipulation of traditional English is rooted also in or informed by the colonial reconstruction of language or deconstruction of language or adaptation and manipulation of language seen, in, for example, in the Caribbean.
Yeah, one of the things that I try my best to do is to open up the poem as a space where a variety of different types of language and registers of language that may exist at different levels of our social hierarchy, from street slang to Queen's English, can interact as equals, but can also challenge one another and, in a sense, in the poem, battle it out.
Okay.
Right there. They can speak against one another. Mm-hmm. And I like the idea that also that there are different types of language that will work best at different points in the poem. If the entire poem is written in Queen's English or is written in street slang, then you might be, if you write your entire poem in street slang, you might be ignoring elements of the Queen's English that might actually help you to better say what you're trying to say and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So it's to have that negotiation, that battle, but also to come to some degree of compromise within the poem with those different types of language.
As a Montreal artist, you're part of a cultural scene in a city that is focused on around the world as a Western point of creative culture, Montreal. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering how you feel your latest book, Maple Leaf Rag, contributes or speaks to Montreal's cultural dynamic today. Montreal is a global city, mm-hmm. and today culture is increasingly informed by diasporas. The messages on our cell phone, on the bus, across one bus, you have messages being sent across the world just on a trip home. Mm-hmm. It's a global city. And increasingly, those diaspora experiences are affecting the cultural production of Montreal. And so I'm wondering, in that sense, how does your book relate to Montreal's cultural identity and artistic identity?
On Saint-Jean, I think. I was listening to CBC Radio, and there was an interview with that old bowling ball, Jacques Parizeau. And he's 80 years old, and he was, at one point, he actually came out and he said, Quebec is not a multicultural society. And the CBC host asked him to clarify. Quebec is not a multicultural society, is what he said. And I found that to be very interesting, because it could be the case that Quebec is not a multicultural society because at the highest levels, power is not necessarily shared among all the diverse groups that inhabit our society. And in that respect, you could say, well, it's not multicultural yet. But on the other hand, if you ride the metro, or if you spend time out in public, or if you work in any kind of workplace, or you go to school at any level, you will be struck by the fact that, you know, at least Montreal, Quebec is a very, very diverse multicultural society. And it's funny because I would have expected more from Jacques Parizeau. But no, I would have expected him to say something like, Quebec is a society, is a diverse multicultural society that is home to immigrants from all over the world, second and third generation Quebecers, people from various points in Canada, people who speak many languages. French is the official language of Quebec. And our challenge for the future is to properly share power among these groups and embrace that diversity. And that diversity is going to provide us with all of our intelligence, all of our greatest human resources that are going to help us compete in the future, economically, culturally, and otherwise. That is our challenge as Quebecers. How do we greet the diversity of the future? And I think that a book like Maple Leaf Rag talks directly to that. This is a book that is written with its eye on the next 100 years, 100 years from now, and the diverse changes that are going to occur in our society. And it addresses that through the blending of artistic forms, the blurring of lines between art forms and literary genres and types of poem, the blurring of lines between music and poetry, between sound and text, etc. And it also talks about cultural experiences that people may have in other parts of the world and here. And so it brings that all together between two covers.